And welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lynn Bartels, who is a journalist with the Denver Post, who the Washington Post, the Fix blog, named as one of Colorado's best political reporters and tweeters. The Rocky Mountain News hired her in 1993 as its night cop reporter, and in 2000 assigned her to her first legislative session. In 2009, the Denver Post hired Bartels after the Rocky Mountain News closed just shy of its 150th birthday. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lynn Bartels.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm trying to figure out what explains the result of this recall of two Democratic state senators who voted for tighter gun control laws after the gun massacres in Aurora, Colorado, and Newtown, Connecticut. And, of course, all this is happening in the state that's the home of two of the most deadly mass shootings in U.S. history. Can you help us out here?
Sure. It's also a Western state. It's an independent state. Colorado is very strange politically. It is almost evenly divided, one-third, 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 among independent voters, Democrats, and Republicans. Traditionally in this state, the unaffiliated voters call the shots. In a very pro-Democratic year, they'll usually vote with the Democrats. In a pro-Republican year, they'll vote with the Republicans. But this is not a state that looks at a lot of gun control. It's the West. There's a lot of hunting. There's a lot of people who've had, you know, firearms in their family for generations.
So what would the urban-rural split be in terms of population? Because that's usually an indicator of
the... Most of the population is definitely, decidedly urban. It's in the Front Range. It's overwhelming. It's called the Front Range, which is, you know, like Denver, the suburbs around it, etc. But nonetheless, there's that long Western tradition. And I think it wasn't just gun control, but how it played out at the state capitol.
Explain further, if you will.
Well, for example, in the state Senate, there were seven bills that were being heard. They scheduled them for all one day. And hundreds of people showed up. And they had to limit the testimony so much because they had, you know, all these bills to hear, that there were hundreds of people who arrived, made long treks from in the southern part of the state or the northern part of the state, and didn't even get to testify. And they were outraged at that, saying, our voices aren't being heard.
And they felt what? That the two senators that were recalled were a part of the problem?
Well, definitely. What's really interesting is if you look at the senators who were called, quite frankly, one lawmaker in the House was the one who sponsored the majority of the gun bills, Representative Rhonda Fields. Her son was murdered. But at the when they were doing this at first, Rhonda is in such a Democratic district that they said, no, we're not even going to attempt it. John Morris is the Senate president. He was recalled. He lives in El Paso County, which is a very Republican county, although he's got more of a Democratic or a mixed, very swing district. But he sponsored a bill that even Democrats publicly said was flat-out nuts, which was this assigning liability for assault weapons to manufacturers and owners, et cetera. He had to withdraw because he didn't even get support from his own caucus. But he withdrew it after it had already been through committee, and so there was all this brain damage over it. Now, what is fascinating about these recalls is that Senator Angela Jaron, a Democrat, both these are Democrats, was recalled. She's from Pueblo, a district that is nearly 50% Democrat, and she got blown out. She lost by 12 percentage points. But Pueblo is not your normal. It's not a liberal Democratic town. It's a union town. It's blue collar. It's hunting. It's recreation with guns. And she really riled up people there. And so what happened was the gun bills were introduced in February. And then everything that was introduced after that was so magnified. Oh, the injustice of it all, this bill and that bill. And then basically Republicans kind of denounced lots of stuff and said, they're not listening to us, they're not listening to us. And that was the mantra.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Lynn Bartels, a journalist with the Denver Post, and we're talking about the recall of two Democratic senators, one of whom was a Senate president, which is being interpreted nationally as a victory for the NRA. And I imagine, given that Democrats are pretty gun-shy about even taking on gun control, and the president forced them into it after the massacre in Newtown, that they're going to be even more gun-shy over this. But in terms of the money that was spent, this
is... Wait a minute. I wouldn't say that the Senate president forced them into it.
No, I'm saying about the president of the United States forced...
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
To me, there's only one president here, and that's our state Senate president.
Right.
Yeah, but here's the irony, is Colorado passes this western state. Obama comes out here to say, see if it can be done in Colorado. It can be done anywhere. And then Congress can't even get anything done.
Right. Well, but in terms of the political class interpreting what's happened, for, you know, whether they get it right or not, how do you explain the money issue where the NRA and supporters of recall were outspent 6-1 by pro-gun control opponents, including Mayor Bloomberg and Los Angeles philanthropist Eli Broud?
Well, it's sometimes easy to look at. I have to say, when it comes to campaign finance, you can kind of make numbers say anything because there's so many groups that don't have to release. And so that you can always say, oh, something's 150 times to one. But the reality is you don't know what some of these groups are spending. I mean, I think one of the strangest things about this whole debate is that Michael Bloomberg personally donated $350,000 to fight the recalls. The outcry, oh, next he's going to come in and take our big gulps away, and this is a New York, you know, an East Coast liberal trying to tell us what to do. Well, the NRA donated $360,000, but they didn't seem to think, you know, tit for tat there. Okay, we're taking money from the NRA, they're taking money from Bloomberg. Shouldn't that cross each other out? But no, it was viewed as Bloomberg once again is trying to tell us what to do in our state.
Well, also, you've got the conservative billionaire Koch brothers who joined in support of this recall with their advocacy group, Americans for Prosperity. But because they're a so-called nonprofit charity, they didn't have to report how much they spent. So I guess...
That's the point I'm making. And AFP did tons of calling. Like, you know, they can't do that thing like vote against Angela Heron, vote against John Morris. So it was much more about remember to go vote. But they also did radio ads and mailers talking about some of the more controversial bills passed in the legislature. The reality is in Colorado was that guns lit the fire and then everything else was thrown on top of it. There was a renewable energy bill that so outraged rural Coloradans that combined with gun laws, has a number of counties voting in November whether to secede from the state of Colorado.
Well, it's still, though, pretty hard to understand how people could get so hot and bothered about a bill that limits magazine clips to 15 rounds and requires universal background checks on all firearm sales. It doesn't seem that radical. And I believe the other point is, of course, it's still the law, right?
Correct. I mean, there's the thing. These two were ousted, but the gun laws are there. Here's the biggest irony of all the bills. One of the bills that passed would have basically charged gun customers the cost of performing that background check. Oh, my God, you would have thought it was the end of the world. I'm being charged to exercise my constitutional right. You know the reality? That there was first a fee charged in Colorado when that was first instituted in the 1990s. It was passed by the Republican-controlled legislature and some of the most staunchest gun right activists in the state. Then to save money, Colorado said, let's not have our own background checks. Let's just do the FBI's. Well, the FBI doesn't catch the local restraining orders. There was a terrible tragedy. The state quickly instituted it. But by that time, remember the good times in the late 90s? Colorado had nearly a $1 billion surplus. So they said, there's no need to charge. So when they went back and said, let's charge like we used to when the Republicans were in control, you would have thought it was the end of the world. That was the one I never understood in a million years.
Well, I'm sure you're aware, Lynn Bartels, that this is definitely, whether people are bothering to find out what happened in Colorado or not, this has national implications, doesn't it?
Oh, it has huge,
right.
Huge national implications. And I loved your word, gun shy.
Well, Lynn, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I really appreciate you joining us here today.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Lynn Bartels, who's a journalist with the Denver Post, who the Washington Post's The Fix blog named as one of Colorado's best political reporters and tweeters. The Rocky Mountain News hired her in 1993 as its night cops reporter, and in 2000 assigned her to her first legislative session. In 2009, the Denver Post hired Bartels after the Rocky Mountain News closed just shy of its 150th birthday. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking with the author of a new book, Lawrence in Arabia, War, Deceit, Imperial Folly, and the Making of the Modern Middle East.
I know my destiny. It's like the sun. You see the best of me when I have got it.